Good morning. I hope you see the slides and see me. So I am Jose Julio González, but don't be afraid of pronouncing my name in a different way. I am used to all kind of pronunciations. First of all, this is being recorded in two different channels. One via Blackboard that will be recorded separately for each session and should be available after the session finishes, the hourly sessions of, well, hourly it's about 45 minutes. And the second recording separately will be done via forelesning.hig.no. HIG is the old name of this institution, Høgskolen I Gjøvik. Okay, very good. This is supposed to be interactive, so at any time please raise your hands and then we can chat, or perhaps even use the microphone if you have questions and so on. The two recordings will be a little bit different in that Blackboard is recording my screen and making a recording of myself, whereas the other recording at forelesning.hig.no will record the screen and myself. So you have a backup there. Now, as to this course, it began with Lara Georg, continues with me. I will have three sessions, three classes in March, and then it will finish with Hannes Lubick in April. We have a different background. Laura and Hannes are more connected to day practice, whereas I am more of a researcher. I am my background is I studied originally physics in Germany, physics and mathematics. In fact, I was supervised by Nobel Prize winner Werner Heisenberg. You might have heard of him because of his being one of the pioneers in quantum mechanics. But then after moving to Norway, where I took a second PhD, the first one was in physics, the second one was in biochemistry in Trondheim at NTNU. Actually, it was called at that time NTH. And then I got a position in southern Norway. At that time, it was more like a college. And then after some mergers, we became a university something like 10 years ago, the University of Agder. My moving to from physics and mathematics to information technology and then security started in the 85, 86, and then it was consolidated in around 1999. And since then, I have been working with security, both information security and security as it is understood by the European Union, that covers also securing assets, protection against natural disasters, terrorism, and so on and so on. And currently, I am working in the area of resilience, being scientific coordinator for a European project involving 13 partners, 4 universities, 2 big institutions, non-GOs, and 7 cities, 7 smart cities. Then in my career, I co-founded a company called PowerSim that developed simulation tools. And I was with that company part-time until 2002. Since then, I left the company. But the company still exists. And it's actually a very good simulation tool. But we are not going to use that tool because PowerSim is a bit too complicated to learn. I have recommended Vensim instead. In my projects, while I work part-time with PowerSim, I was consultant in different projects for BP Exploration, for British Telecom, for Statoil, for SCA Packaging, And then as a professor at the University of Agder, I have participated in several big projects, some of them funded by the Norwegian Research Council, some of them funded by the European Union. And you will see examples from these projects, because my point here is that in a changeable world, we will always meet novel challenges. And we will be in situations where we don't know enough. So we have to do research. And therefore, my topic is security management metrics for novel security challenges. Now, looking at the screen here, you might have seen it before, but let me show you the agenda. Today, we will concentrate on fundamentals. The first topic, group model building, is a procedure for experts in modeling and eliciting knowledge to work together with problem owners so as to find out new issues, understand new challenges, develop solutions, and embed them in models that are comprehensive. In that respect, making models of the problem achieves this holistic understanding. Holistic means something like embedding all the essential aspects. So therefore, I will give you an introduction to modeling and simulation, not to make you experts, because that will be too big a challenge. To become an expert in modeling and simulation, you will have to take a master in that. As you have, for instance, in the University of Bergen, you have a master in system dynamics. But rather, the point with introducing this methodology to you is that you know the essentials and you know where to find it and how to proceed if you need it. So, for instance, something like 15 years ago, I had a student at my master class in Grimstad. His name was Håkon Mørk, and he later got a job at Mnemonic, which probably you know, that's a company dealing with outsource information security. And Mnemonic had a problem. They contacted us. Here, Håkon was essential, and we conducted a research project with them. I will show you a few things about that project later. And then in March 17, in 2 weeks, we will continue with topics like continuous security improvement, all the time based on my experience in projects, computer security incident response teams, information security during technology adoption in critical infrastructure. And I will introduce a project for you that will count to the examination. And finally, in the last day, March 31st, I will give you a new view of maturity models connected to using group model building, GMB, group model building and simulation. And also look at the economics of information security, the role of misaligned incentives, network externalities, asymmetric information, tragedy of commons, and other things that make information security hard to achieve. Then, as to today, the tentative agenda, it's the first time that I hold this course, so therefore the agenda is a bit tentative. We'll see how, if I have estimated the time correctly for the different sessions. But the tentative agenda is group model building, the first 2 hourly sessions. Then we will do some exercise together. Then I will introduce modeling simulation with applications. In between, I will show you some modeling, so in a sense, hands-on modeling, hands-on exercises during the lecture. Then we will have another exercise, and I will explain what I would suggest as homework for the next time. Okay? Any questions? Okay, then it seems that's okay. Then let's go to the next one, which is the group model building to elicit novel knowledge. Okay, that's too big. If you wonder what Prof 2 means, Professor 2, that means a part-time position. Nominally 20% of my time is dedicated to NTNU. Otherwise, to my main position at the University of Agder. In terms of being at office, I am very much traveling. Last year, for instance, half of my time I spent abroad. From New Zealand in the east to Bulgaria, more in the west. I was in Hawaii, I was in Omaha, in State New York, in Albany. Okay, bad connection. But I don't know what to do because I haven't changed anything. Yes, I have no clue as to what I should do because I haven't changed anything. I am connected to the internet. Okay, come and goes loud and clear here. Okay, then I suggest the following. If something is unclear, the sound or whatever, then please ask me to repeat and I will go back. So basically I was telling you that I am traveling a lot because of projects. So United States 3 or 4 times, from Hawaii to different other states. And New Zealand, I was guest at Auckland University of Technology all the time because of projects that I'm having with them, but also because invitations to give keynotes or presentations in conferences and so on, and also workshops in my project. So because of this, it will continue to be so. I have offered to you that we could have virtual meetings via Skype, and you might have get an email. University, that's State University of New York. William White asked which university in Albany. University of Albany, State University of New York. Yes, SUNY. That's right. Yes, because of my being traveling all the time, so and also not being at office in UBIC so often, I have suggested appointments via Skype, and you should have got an email to that respect. So I will be available in that hours. Otherwise, if you need to talk to me, send me an email and we can make a separate appointment. Now, as to the objectives of this lecture, it's to provide you a thorough introduction of how to deal with security challenge and try to establish security metrics when the problem that the enterprise or the organization faces requires new knowledge. That is, you have to do research. And very often, that leads to cooperation between the organization and the university. By the way, my experience is that many of the students of my former courses, until last year, I taught security management here at NTNU. I did that for 10 years. So many of the students who took my course have chosen projects with this methodology of modeling and simulation, especially Norwegian defense. I think I have had as many as 6 to 8 students from Norwegian defense over the years who took master courses with me. And that's because they faced novel challenges. So facing novel challenges, they found this methodology useful. So what I want to do is to explain you the procedure that your organization, your company will face if they have novel challenges and they lack sufficient knowledge to address the challenge. And in that respect, the methodology denominated system dynamics, which is kind of a combination of management with modeling simulation, can be used for eliciting novel knowledge, as you will see. Okay, so the content of this course, I will start by giving you some examples where companies and organizations face challenges in unknown landscape, something novel for them. And then I will make a digression on the history of measurement, and you will see why when I make the digression. Then I will start to explain the methodology of group model building and the role of system dynamics in this respect. Again, as to system dynamics, which is modeling and simulation of systems that need to be managed for better performance, and it has been applied to a lot of systems, not only security. As to that, again, my point is to give you a basic understanding so that you know what it is, you understand what it can and how it can be applied. And some students in the past found this so useful that they went into the depths. I will give you access later to a whole course on system dynamics. It's already mentioned in the tutorial, but I hadn't uploaded yet. I will upload it later. And there you have something like 150 slides of courses that I used to give for enterprises when I was working for PowerSim. And in that, then you will have the opportunity, if you like, to go more into the depths of system dynamics, or else to know where you can look when you need it and whom to contact. Because as you said before, these projects that I conducted were cooperations between academia, within university, and enterprises, at least during the last years. Before that, there were cooperations between the company PowerSim and enterprises. So let's look at an example. So originally, when Norway started with offshore platforms for oil and gas, the operations were conducted in the platforms themselves. They were kind of own reins, own territories, and they had very little communication with other platforms or even onshore. So basically everything was done in the platforms. And that started in the late 1960s. But then, as networks became more and more powerful, and internet as well, a transition to e-operations was developed in the 1990s. Later, the name e-operations was changed to integrated operations, to emphasize that by connecting all the platforms with each other and with control centers onshore, then you had an extension of capabilities. It was not only as to about conducting the operations of extracting oil and gas, it was about everything from the very beginning of seismic operations to the very end of closing down the installations, including financial management, and so on, and so on, and so on. So the first pilot project in e-operations or integrated operations was in the early 2000s, probably, if I recall it correctly, in 2003. And we had a project founded by the Research Council that involved two institutions, my institution, University of Agder, SINTEF in Trondheim, with two different departments in SINTEF. And we cooperated with the institution that represented all the offshore operations. I forgot right now the Norwegian name for that, but no matter. Anyhow, so we had a very strong cooperation with that. And our partner who was conducting the pilot project was Norsk Hydro. At that time, Norsk Hydro had offshore platforms. Later, as you probably know from the history, Norsk Hydro Offshore merged with Statoil, and for a while the company was called Statoil Norsk Hydro, and then later it was renamed to just Statoil again, back to Statoil. So we had a project with them, and the reason was the point here. Let me see in a hand. You see, I am pointing at that. How do you identify security vulnerabilities? I can't play films. Okay, that was Siri in my phone. I didn't ask her to talk, but she chatted. Maybe she's listening to that lecture and Siri and my iPhone and found that is a nice lecture. Anyhow, joke apart. So how do you identify security vulnerabilities ahead of transferring traditional operations to integrated operations? So how do you know how risky is the operation? How do you know what are the risks you are introducing? How do you measure them? And how do you develop a security management strategy? Now, I would like you attending this lecture to think a little bit about that. And what would you do if you were the CEO of, say, Norsk Hydro at that time, and you know you were entering a new landscape? How would you deal with that? What would your strategy be? Any comments? Any suggestions? Okay. Yes, William says modeling. Yes, indeed. What is modeling about? Some people distrust models, in a sense. They think you can't cheat with models. You can't do things. You don't have control of that, or rubbish in, rubbish out, whatever. But let's look a little bit about the way we think. William, you are from New York. How is it? Do you have New York? Do you have New York in your head as a city? Or do you have a model of New York? That is, perceptions of the city, how it looks like, about the streets, where you find the things, how the people behave, and so on and so on. Similarly, okay, I say yes. Rune, you are probably Norwegian. So do you have Norway in your head? No, what you have in Norway is memories, experiences that allow you to navigate in the country, to make predictions as to how people will behave, whom you can talk to and about and so on. So we have models about everything in our head. We call them mental models. We have mental models of our country. We have mental models of our family. We have mental models of our problems. And they are very, very rich, these models, very, very good. Our brain is incredibly able to deal with things and form relations and allow us to navigate. But now, if I ask you to make predictions based on your mental models, how would you think that your predictions are? Are you able to predict what is going to happen with some problem or some issue? Well, prediction means tracing what decisions, the consequences of decisions, and it has to do with causes, what something causes, what are the consequences of the causes, what are the consequences of the consequences and the consequences, and so on. And there our brain is not so good at that. And that's why we use computer-based models. Computer-based models are very good when it concerns tracing the consequences over time of your decisions. So the issue is to make a model that is useful for your problem. It's not so much about the right model, because no model is completely right. All models, in a sense, are wrong. For instance, if I say you make a model, yes, Rune says a model simplifies the real world. And that's true. It is a simplification. For instance, look at some room. You are now in a room. Suppose I ask you, make a model of the room. Probably you will be confused because you will ask me back, for what? A model for what? Okay, and then I tell you, yes, I want you to model the room with respect to security. That is, put everything, represent in your model, everything that is important, if there is a fire or some other thing, some other event, some terror attack and so on, so that you should be able to handle the situation as best as possible. Then it's about how to give an alarm, how to know how to behave, how to escape, and so on and so on. If I ask you to model the room with respect to, say, this is an old room, it needs to be improved, the painting is bad, the furniture needs to be replaced and so on, then that's a completely different model. So, yes, you simplify the reality, but the way you simplify it is by leaving out what is irrelevant for your problem and keeping what is essential. And that is the point. So going back to these challenges, what we did was indeed to create a model for the transition from platform-centric operations to integrated operations. And the way we did that was by meeting together with different experts from Knock Zero with respect to their offshore operations, so that they combine expertise. They represent the different disciplines and different experiences. They combine discipline should give us the best possible access to information about integrated operation, the transition to integrated operations. And who were we? We were modelers. We were the people who knew how to make the model. They were the people who had the key expertise about the problem. So that's the way it is. It is a coalition between domain experts and modeling experts. So let's now go to the next challenge. Another example is incident reporting systems. So why is aviation so extremely safe? It is so safe that the odds of being in an airline in a flight that results in at least one fatality is 1 in 10 million for the best, for the top 39 airlines of the world. And if you click on the link here, then you will see a source illustrating this. So that means the odds of having an accident that results in at least a fatality, not even your fatality, but at least one fatality, is much smaller than you winning in nox tipping. Have you tried to win in nox tipping? I guess you have. You know how difficult it is. You can spend many lives in tipping and still not getting the millions. So this is extremely safe. Why? Similarly, yes, extremely process-driven, says Runa. Yes, but what does it mean, process-driven? I'm not so sure as to what you are hinting at. Can you explain that in with a bit more text? Process-driven. Okay, while I am waiting for Rune's comment, routines for many things, yes. Yes, indeed. But I would like to hit the nail with a hammer. So let me give another example. Chemical industry had a terrible history with major accidents. There were accidents in Seveso in Bhopal that were really terrible and horrible, with not only many victims, but also many people who died, but also many who were fatally ill and suffer lifelong among those who survive. So now chemical accidents have become rare and much less fatal. Again, why? Look at the source. Well, the key is, in those both sectors, you have very effective incident reporting systems. Here is there is a distinction between incident and accident with respect to aviation and chemical industry. Here we have a different terminology. William says, yes. Yes, it is also aviation. Aviation wouldn't have been commercial unless it became safe. So there was a very strong incentive from the beginning to reduce the number of accidents, and accidents is where there is a crash, reduce them. As to chemical industry, well, yes, yes, all these comments, all these comments are correct, yes. But going back to this history, aviation turned to use incident reporting systems very early, because every accident, every crash and so on was very negative for financial purposes. They simply lost customers. So customers needed to feel safe, otherwise they wouldn't fly. As to chemical accidents, here there was very big money and they neglected security and safety long time, until regulation, international regulation, forced them to improve. In both cases, the idea is the following. Incidents with respect to aviation and chemical industry should be interpreted as near misses. That is something that could have gone wrong but didn't, as opposed to accidents where it goes wrong. Now, the point is the following. For every accident in aviation or in chemical industry, there are thousands of situations that are near misses, where the people recognize they did something incorrectly, but that didn't explode, that didn't crash, and so on. There is something called the Swiss cheese model, which probably you have seen. Have you heard about the Swiss cheese model? Any of you have heard about the Swiss cheese model? No? Okay, then I will explain. The Swiss cheese has holes in between. And now, in with respect to accidents, the metaphor is every hole is a vulnerability. But only when the holes in the cheese are aligned, you come through that. So it is similar with accidents in aviation or chemical industry. You have a number of vulnerabilities in the system, things that are potentially risky, but it is only when all these vulnerabilities, in a sense, are aligned that you really have the accident. If one of them is not aligned, then it doesn't get through. So you have a lot of near misses, and the idea with an incident report systems is report, give incentives that people report when something happens that shouldn't have happened, then get it investigated, find the root causes, disseminate the learning so as to avoid future situations that could be risky and could culminate in an accident. So, knowing that this was the reason why aviation has been improving and improving all the time, and Kimberlic industry also, because of having effective incident reporting systems, then the key issues is, why don't we have done with cybersecurity? Why are effective incident reporting systems so extremely difficult to implement? Or more to the point, considered an enterprise and mnemonic, they want to improve their incident reporting systems so as to continuously improve it. What should they do? Again, what they did is, owing to the fact that Holcomb Merck knew about system dynamics and group model building, they contacted us and we had a project with them. Okay? So, next slide. Another example of security management in unknown landscape about computer security incident response teams. The first, what we today call a computer security incident response teams, was originally called CERT. Computer Emergency Response Team. It was founded in 1988 at Carnegie Mellon University in Pittsburgh as a response, I believe, for the first computer virus. Later, CERT was renamed to CERT Coordination Center. Then several CERTs were funded. And a few years later, I think it was 93 or something like this, a report of the state of the practice of CERTs concluded that they had a lot of problems. The staff was overworked, there was burnout, they didn't have sufficient time to handle the incidents well, they had a lot of turnover, people went and they had to replace that with less experienced people, they had poor service quality, they tried to improve quality continuously, but the attempts to do that, they were abortive, they had to be giving up. And then the situation continued to be so. In 2002 or 2003, a team at CERT Coordination Center did a new study on the state of the art of CERTs and concluded that still there were these problems of overworked staff, burnout, insufficient time to handle incidents, poor service, unclear mission, turnover, and so on and so on. So at that time, I had a PhD student, Johannes Wieck, who had, by the way, taken a master in system dynamics at the University of Bergen. And we visited Carnegie Mellon University and CERT again. I had already a relation with them by working with them on insider threat. I forgot to mention that originally. That was also a very interesting project that I had with a collaboration with different universities, including SUNY Albany and CERT. So we visited them in Pittsburgh, and met with the guys who had developed the study on C-certs. And it turned out that one of the guys who was co-authored, he was a German, Klaus-Peter Kosakowski, who now was back in Germany. He was running a big C-cert called the DFG-cert, Deutsches Forschungsnetzwerk-cert. I think it's not DFG, but DFN should be, DFN-cert. Okay, I will correct that in the slides. So we paired with him, and we contacted Wolf Model Building and developed a model, and we handled the situation for how C-cells should manage continuous quality improvement. But then it turned out that they had two problems, the C-cells. The first one was about the flat of incidence and how to achieve continuous quality improvement. But then we discovered a second very interesting problem, and that was that the C-cells had problems in keeping a stable constituency. So what is a constituency? Here we are speaking of so-called sternal coordinating C-cells. So they are not an internal part of an organization. Rather, different organizations, in this case German universities and German research institutions, they had an external C-cert that coordinated the constituencies, the clients' security problems. So the way they occurred is that when one of the members of the constituency had an incident, security incident, and in the case of security, an incident is not the same as an incident in the case of aviation and so on. In the case of aviation, an incident is a near miss. In the case of information security, an incident is a hit. So it's an event that resulted in something unpleasant. It can be little unpleasant or it can be more unpleasant. Anyhow, when incidents occur, the affected client or institution, the affected part of the constituency, reported that to the CSIRT so that it can be analyzed, resolved, and then the lessons be disseminated to all the constituency. So, obviously, the CSIRT is interested in keeping the constituency interested and keeping the funding of the constituency. But then it turned that because of the novel incidents that had highest priority, the CSIRT experienced a very strange long-term instability. Sometimes they had very good reporting, sometimes they had less interest in reporting constituency, and the clients went off from the constituency, and then they came back and so on. So they wanted to understand this instability so as to achieve a more stable management of high priority incident handling and keeping the constituency. And again, this resulted as a spin-off of the project that Johannes Wick was conducting. This problem arose, we discovered that it was a new issue, and we managed also to develop a model that explained the problems and gave recommendations to the CSIRTs to manage better the constituency. All the time, if you have comments or questions, then please raise your hands. What I am trying to do is to give you first a number of issues where you see the novel knowledge that is required, and all the time emphasizing group model building help us. And then you will see this back later on. We will see the models that we develop and discuss them. So now a different issue that we met was achieving resilience of critical infrastructure. As you probably know, there has been a transition from risk management that addresses the mitigation of known risk to resilience, which includes not only known risk, but also accounting for the unexpected. Madoff, who is a consultant to the